Hello and welcome to another episode of Tried and True, a podcast hosted by Delaware War Machine. I am your host, Paul.
Dan's here.
Hi, I'm Andy.
I'm Erica.
We just got back from the Booger Brawl. I don't know about you, but I know we all had our different ways of needing to recover from the event.
Yeah, I spent all of Monday on the couch with my wife. Well, after work, that is.
I am no longer dying, if anyone is wondering if I was still dying.
I like saw you pulling out of the parking lot when Erica was leaving. I'm like, oh my God. Like, he
looks I'm not, cool. I'm going to be honest. I'm not entirely sure how I got there. I'm gonna, I drove there.
Did you go to the spirit world?
I was hallucinating all morning. I'm going to be completely honest. Like, I don't think I got any REM sleep the night before.
I was going around the hall asking who did what to my husband the night before.
For once, I swear I wasn't involved in this.
I was so pissed at myself too. I went 3-0 on Saturday. I was feeling good, you know, like, I don't know. There's always next year, I guess.
It's okay. I'm glad you're feeling better.
I'm glad you're feeling better too.
Yeah, me too.
I yet live.
Rumors of his death have been greatly exaggerated, everybody.
All right, so for all the listeners, thank you so much for giving us your time listening. Thank you, shout out to More Than Dice for giving us a platform to go and share all the good stuff. I think from the last time that we've been doing our recordings, Erica, you offline, you were mentioning that there's a couple of new or returning podcasts that have just been coming out.
Yeah, so coming off the Booger Brawl, of course, we want to plug the Booger Broadcast. That is the podcast hosted by the NJSOB Meta. And Battle Driven has come back. That's Dan Riker and his team. So welcome back. It's good to hear you guys on the podcast again. And then our good friends, Booger Memes, John from Central New York, they just started a new podcast called Arcane Precision. Check them out. There's a lot of good stuff and community building information on there too. John's great. Les is great. All those guys are awesome. So give them a listen.
I need to say something because I know that if I don't mention this, I will never hear the end of it. I have to say thanks to Art from the Booger Broadcast because he gave me a tip about something that I needed to do around the house. So if I don't mention him, I feel like it's just going to come up and it'll never go away. So there you go, Art.
Good job, Art.
Thank you, Art.
Your influence knows no bounds.
Thank you for all the folks on Patreon for giving us your continued support and helping us being able to knock out all the stuff that we've been able to go and do. All your helpful donations have been helping us put out a lot of good content to allow us to go make the Battle Reports podcast, all the stuff out there. So just thank you from the bottom of our hearts for helping us support us. If you're interested, you can take a look at the notes below to see if you want to join the Patreon yourselves. As for at least today, we're going to be doing a quick, debrief of Booger Brawl, talking about the events of Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and getting right into it. So I think overall, I want to say this was our fourth Booger Brawl playing. And I think, Erica, you and I were talking about it as like fifth overall for you because you visited the one year, am I right?
Yeah, Andy and I went just to hang out for the weekend. We didn't play, but yeah, it's our fourth year playing, fifth year going.
Yeah, what were everyone's thoughts about this year compared to the previous years? I guess like overall.
I think this will be my sixth or seventh, actually. I remember one that was a smaller three-man event before we moved to the big VFW. But I think this one was a big resurgence. Since the pandemic, we've had some smaller events, but this is the first time the Booger Brawl really felt like it was back in full force, and I was there for it.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a ramp up. Eric and I noticed at Adepticon as well, where it's like things are filling up quick. Like the interest is back. Like Booker's hopefully only going to get bigger from here.
Well, that's what I noticed with the big base brawl. I think that had got filled out immediately and had a wait list. Yeah. Waiting in for that.
I've never seen any of the events at Booger Brawl sell out before, so that's a first.
And it sold out within the first 12 hours. Like, I remember messaging other team captains that morning, like, you guys need to get on and get your tickets because they had to expand it a few times, right?
They did, because I think originally it was a max of 16 tickets for the captains, and I think I was spot number 14 out of 16 when they're first coming out. So, no, you're right.
I forgot to mention earlier, I want to plug Tyrants on the Field. Jay did an awesome spin-up leading up to the brawl, reviewing all the lists, and that was super informative to me because I don't do the spreadsheet thing, okay, full disclosure. But listening to the breakdown of the list was super helpful, and then he did some number crunching in real time and has a very, very good numbers breakdown from data from Longshanks. So if folks are interested to see, you know, what armies did well, which casters did well, I'd highly recommend you take a listen to Tyrants on the Field.
Yeah, big daddy Hurus coming in strong there.
Oh yeah, I think didn't they end up saying that he was a 95% win rate for the weekend or something like that?
When he went first, I think, okay, was gotcha. That for the team. But
almost
I guess
like he shoves you off the scenario.
I think that was applicable to the team event for the most part. I don't think he his breakdown included the Friday events. The individuals.
I think you're right. He was doing the numbers for the team event.
Correct.
But, I will admit I am partially responsible for those numbers.
One thing I guess coming into the brawl, you could, like, 3D terrain was all over the place and it was great. So kudos to Seth, Steve, and David for, you know, putting together some really pretty tables. You could tell a lot of the labor and love went into all the 3D printing and all the painting, and the armies really popped on the 3D terrain.
Yeah, I know there were some complaints about it being a little bit barren, but like, you got to remember, like, as someone who runs some of these events, like, to fill that many tables just to get, like, especially because there's more terrain now than there was before, like, you need exponentially more terrain than you needed before to fill the same number of tables. It's crazy.
I was talking to David Lee a lot of times because he was the guy more or less in charge of doing most of the terrain. I think, like, Seth and him worked together on it. Regardless, though, he told me about, I had these many tents to paint and these many pillars to go ahead and do, and da, 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 da. And when you really look at the amount of terrain, all the things, amount of time spent to do, like, one piece of terrain to crank them out. And then even on, like, the pillars, like, they added the static grass material to make them look mossy. Like, just those little tiny details really just kind of sell those pieces a little bit more and really help you get into the world and the game that you're playing in. So the guys that did that, I cannot speak highly enough, or I cannot commend you enough, because I know the work that goes into it and it is not unnoticed. So thank you for improving my experience by having all those pieces of terrain on there.
Seth, you are a pillar of our community. Dave, you are the Bill Murray. Thank you.
He continues to Bill Murray everything. It's just
we salute you.
That is the verb.
And Steve, don't forget Steve. He does a lot for the brawl also.
Yeah. Steve. Mighty Steve.
Real quick, two pieces of the terrain that we don't normally use locally that I was really supportive of were the storms that inhibited flying models.
Oh, and the dust devils as well?
Yeah, and the little what was it, whirlwinds?
Dust devils.
Dust devils. Yeah. We really don't use them much locally. We really need to start. I think they really helped, like, add some strategy to dealing with guns and stuff like that.
It's incredible about how much of a difference it makes for, like, even just choosing your sides, because we never would, as you said, we never would use it, and then stacking that on top of windstorm, like, huh, minus six.
No, so you don't make it okay, so not everybody obscene. Gets to make it broken. Well, Paul, all right,
how Halexis putting his toes into a dust devil under windstorm while controlling a 30 millimeter objective, it's not strong enough.
I wasn't even going to mention how broken it was in Orgoth, all right? I was going to give you that. You were going to have that, and it was going to be okay, but okay. All right.
Everyone knows, Andy. Everyone already knows.
I had so many games where the Rock Harriers were just, like, towing into them, like, oh my gosh, what a time to be alive. Like, this is so nice.
The one thing, I guess, to talk a little bit about the killing field. So Saturday, Sunday tables were definitely an improvement from Friday. Something that someone on our Discord recommended, I think it was Dan Spinball, is using painter's tape. So I think what happens is, over the course of a day, terrain gets moved and doesn't necessarily get reset because of the scenarios, right? You have to put the scenario elements down and sometimes you have to move stuff. So what I noticed throughout the day is just tables were just getting spread. And that happens with our steamrollers as well. And he says you could take like painter's tape and put that down at the locations for your four big like line of sight blockers. And that way, when your players are done their game, they can reset the terrain somewhat around the area. It won't be exactly on top, but at least those key terrain features get put back on the table roughly where they should go.
I mean, it's also good for your scatter pieces as well.
Yep, scatter. Yep. I think you should do it for everything. Because what's to stop you just starting saying, you know, that hill was generally in that location. That's where the TO originally planted it. So if you do have to move for deploying your objectives, then, you know, probably put it back covering that small bit of painter's tape, at least a little bit.
So, I mean, like, we're really highlighting a bunch of the different things that they did differently. So we're mentioning the 3D terrain. Oh, not to even mention, they had the ridge, which was a custom piece of terrain.
Oh, so that- cool.
They that Seth came up with where it
that was
like
art. Art came up with the ridge. He's been talking about the ridge for years, man. He was talking about the ridge last year.
It's all about that ridge, man.
Yeah.
You're right. So for those who weren't aware of the rules, it was basically like a hill on one side of it and then a wall on the other, an obstacle where you couldn't really charge over. And there was times that I played where, you know, I use both aspects of the ridge and really, really, really got into it. Definitely messed me up on one of my charge lanes or on one of my matches, but I really did like the ingenuity. It reminds me back of what Lauren talked about, where when you're a TO for these events, like, make weird terrain, have these special rules and have something fun. And it's definitely going to go and make your events stick out a little bit more and just that much more memorable when you get to go and play them.
Yeah, speaking of the weird terrain, though, the terrain primer is very important if you're going to have weird terrain. Because if you have a question about what terrain does, you have all the answers available to you because they give you a primer on exactly what all the terrain does.
I stapled so many of those packets together. It was, No, but I mean, it was really nice to be able to help out Seth and be able to have those on the tables. I think everybody had them. It was great because, again, as a TO and as a judge, you don't have to go over and explain what this is. And I remember that there was one game. It was like, oh, this is an obstacle, right? And then we pulled up the thing like, no, the pillars are obstructions. So it just answers the questions that you would not need to have a judge come over for. So I think there were definitely a lot of judge calls over the weekend, but I'm pretty certain that there was a lot less than there would have been without that packet.
Yeah, I agree. I love that ridge. I love how it adds something to the table side choice, like inherently by itself, because it is functionally something different depending on which side of the table you're starting on. You know, if it's facing sideways or whether you're swinging left to right, if it's kind of facing perpendicular to your board edge.
What's really cool is that some of the pieces of the terrain, or at least the tables, had it set up where the wall side was facing you, and right next to it, like not even 3 inches away, there was another ridge, and the wall side was facing your opponent. And even stuff like that just made it really weird. No, but I mean, like, really kind of engaging of a game to go and play. And yeah, it really, like, changed up where your models could end up being positioned.
All in all, every year when I go to the Boker Ball, Seth and the gang always wow me with their terrain choices and the tables that they set up. And it always makes me come back home and say, man, we need to step our game up with our terrain here. We need all these, like, you know, cool little slim forests and, you know, extra storms everywhere and all these new templates. We got to start incorporating the weird stuff so that our games are not the same every time.
What's nice is that because, and I'm even noticing it for our events, is that once the 3D terrain is made, you have that for every single event going forward. So you can just build upon it for year after year after year. And also what was nice is that there wasn't any neoprene houses either. Like, there were the tents and then there were like the buildings. I remember from the previous brawls, there were like the giant concrete slabs that had the footprint as, I think, those hidden forest houses that were like the, I don't know, like 3x5s, I think was like roughly the size of them. But I didn't see any of those on any of the tables. So it was just good.
Oh, the tree trunks were a little bit weird though for 3D terrain, just because they had those little tendrils of roots coming out of the side. So like landing anywhere near them with a circular base was like very tentative.
How did you and your
dangerous
opponent
charge lanes will though? Be obstructed.
But I mean, how did you guys play that? Did like, even if you had the little tendril around you, did that just give you your cover, or did you use the more so like the ring of the, or the trunk of the tree?
No, we use every part of it. Like, you couldn't land on part of the route. If you're within an inch of part of the route, you still get the cover. Like, it's, I think from a terrain perspective, it's almost always best to use the entire part of the terrain. Like, if you have a house on top of a square, like they did, we use the whole square. Like, you're not going to land on the ridge of the house, stuff like that. I think that just makes for a cleaner game.
No, I agree. And I think, I mean, I had the exact same experiences in my matches where we said that the little squiggly bits of the trees were going to be cover no matter what. So I think as long as you and your opponent agree upon that before the game ends up going, I don't think it would really matter. But I do agree that when it comes to charging out of those, it really did kind of prevent you from where you'd be able to go.
Yeah, it definitely affected one of my games on Friday. I think it was Matt from Canada. He had like millimeters to charge my caster, and I think the tree was really screwing with him with the angle. And we called Rabideau over as a judge, and he had to get down on his hands and knees and figure out the measurement. And it got real goofy.
Okay. And then what about some other changes? So one thing that so last Poker Brawl, they had the narrative event that I believe that was done by War Bungies that Erica and Andy played in, which was like the giant Kador wall.
Oh, that's what we did on Friday last year.
Yeah, it was the big siege of the Kador wall last year, yeah.
Yeah, so this year they had another narrative scenario where it was a town with a giant bridge in the middle. And the more or less what the story was trying to control the bridge the whole entire time. So I got to go and do that. That was a neat experience, though. I was fortunate to experience what I did because it was a 4-person narrative event. But when we got there, it was only myself and I think another gentleman by the name of Phil that was my opponent for it. So we were only able to play on half of the table. And Finn, I believe that was his name, the game master for the event, he did a very good job of being resilient to the change, being able to kind of think on his feet and to just, you know, shift gears so that we're only on half the map. But I was just thankful for that because just looking towards the future for our Nova narrative event is in the event that, you know, it's a 10-person event, but if we only have 8 people or 6, like how do you end up adjusting it? So at least for planning purposes, it allows us to take that insight going forward into the event. So that way we at least have a plan and not trying to come up with something on the fly.
I agree. When you're trying to do something new, or at least something that you're new to doing, you know, once or twice, it's definitely always great to get input from different spaces, from different people, sources, etc. Take all the different ideas and cherry pick the ones you like and use those influences to make something, you know, the best sum of the parts that it can be.
Yeah, one thing I did like about the narrative was they had the little town, which was Kane against the townspeople. And to save time and resources, Seth described it like they did old westerns back in the day where it was just the front of the building, not a full structure. And then they had this black wall and then it was mirrored on the other side. So another group could play the same exact scenario on the other side. I thought that was really smart. And the town was absolutely adorable.
It looks so cool. It looked just like a western. You're right.
Right. Neat. And then one last thing that was different this year was, is this the first year that we did Longshanks for Poker Brawl? Because I don't remember this at all. And maybe Dan, you can speak to it because you've done more of these events than we have.
I think they did Sheets last year.
They right? did. This is the first year they did Longshanks because this past year, I think, was the first time they used it for WTC.
Oh, and that's why they moved Listlock up too. Mm-hmm. They we only had 2 weeks before for Listlock this year because getting everything in Longshanks and getting it verified is much easier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So what was your overall thoughts about doing the list pairing in Longshanks? Because I'll just say this is that for uploading everything was fine, but the challenges I found was actually once we were at the table and understanding what all the lists were, because we didn't have any of those steamroller sheets as we had in the past to see, oh, right, what is this team? What list do you have? Which solos did you end up taking that's in here? So
what we do is, I really like using Longshanks. I didn't miss the lists at all. What we did this year, the same thing we did at ATC, was we literally had each person on each team take a warcaster from their army to represent their army, and then they would just drop that warcaster on the table. So instead of it, I guess our team looked at it more abstractly, where it's not, okay, like, who are your two leaders, and this is the army, that's it. We really didn't go into the nitty-gritty of the lists. Like, I feel like the lists are available and on Longshanks to look at.
Yeah, we went into them as we needed to, but like, yeah, they, you can pull them up in Longshanks, and I think as people get better at using Longshanks as a tool, like the clunkiness between the teams will get a little bit easier, because I agree it is a little bit clunky right now compared to when we had lists between the teams.
But I feel like our matchup, like we were done within 5 minutes from when we got to pairing, like no more, like between 5 and 10 minutes, and we were at our tables playing our opponents.
I guess where I'm getting at is that, and not to say that I had issue with it, but I wasn't prepared for trying to figure out a method. And it wasn't until I think round two that we were playing the Canadians that I found out that it was index cards. And they said like, you know, this person. So we didn't do the model like on the table until round three. So it was just not having a system set up for the first round. It just felt a little chaotic. And Dan, I mean, did it feel that way? Because I don't think we really had any rhyme or reason.
Yeah, call me old-fashioned, but I do still like to see army lists written out. Maybe it's a psychological aspect of it, but like sometimes players will record their armies on a sheet of paper in a different order than the app does. Anytime you make a list in the app, it's always sorted the exact same way, you know, battle groups and then solos and, you know, units and things. But sometimes someone's going to write, you know, all of their units up top or all of their solos up top. It might give away what's important to them in the list. I like having that information. But I'm with Paul when what you just said is something that I really feel. Going into it, I wasn't expecting to come up with a method of abstracting the pairing process on the spot. It wasn't until Sunday that someone told me the, you know, put your Warcaster model on the table trip. I had seen people using, you know, note cards or cue cards, but you know, I just hadn't thought to prep that going in. We'd always had sheets before. So next year I'm definitely going to either do the Warcaster thing or you know, come with index cards just in case. Because I feel like having that physical token or something really makes the pairing process go faster. Especially when you are using spreadsheets, especially when the individuals you're playing against don't have names that match them on Longshanks. That's like a username or something else. And you have to kind of say, wait, which one is your Orgoth player again? That guy? Okay. So that abstraction, you know, writing the name, writing the username, writing out the leader model, that could all help, I think.
From the TO perspective, this really does lower the barrier of entry for someone who's newer and wanting to run more events, though. This will help you do the matchup math more automatically. This will help you make sure players don't play on the same tables. This will help you do the in-between round math in order to make sure your matchups are correct and it's more error-free. Longshanks is an incredible tool for a TO to actually make sure you run a clean event too, which I don't think can be understated.
Right. I'm going to say for the next event, I'm going to include it as my player responsibility to bring a method to track my pairing process. It's something I learned. I took away from the event. The
thing that I like most about Longshanks is it's a great way to involve the greater community to be able to track the players and the events in real time. Because given the location we were at, so Ice King, little shout out to him. Unfortunately, we weren't unable, or he was unable to stream games because of the quality of the Wi-Fi or connectivity, but he was able to record games. So for events where, you know, if you have a local steamroller and you can't stream or you can't record it, it's a way for the community to stay engaged and see what's going on.
It's like the old Discount Games website. Remember that, where people were tracking results?
I think he still does that.
This is a lot more data, though.
Yes. Them stats, though.
Them leaderboards as well.
Oh, yeah. A couple of our players ended up on their faction leaderboards because they are representing underplayed minority of factions right now.
Hey, if you're on the list, you're on the list. I don't care. Like,
what. Damn right. Win's a win, man. Take that W.
And then what? You know what? We're talking about the teams because if we didn't really mention this, was that Erica had a really good idea on splitting up the teams this year. And I think we should actually spend a little bit of time talking about that, about the goals for this year. So, or at least this Spoker Brawl. So, Erica, can you speak about breaking up the band for this year?
Yeah. So we're going to talk about the intention, the execution, and what actually happened. So since we have our core group of five, right? So it's Paul, myself, Dan, Andy, and Gatorman Pete, and we've been playing together for a few years. Now that the game's growing and we had more of our local players who are interested in coming to Bocor, we thought, well, hey, maybe we'll split up our team. I think we fielded three total, and what we wanted to do was split our veteran players up, and by veteran, I mean people who have gone to wargaming conventions before, because for a lot of our folks, this was their very first multi-day convention, multi-day tournament, first team tournament, and we didn't want those guys to just kind of be thrown, you know, out into the wind and figure stuff out. So we kind of took like a coaching mentorship kind of approach to it this year, which the concept was good. We were able to mix our teams. Skill level was a little bit all over the place. And then we were also able to mix metas up that weren't able to fill full teams. So that was the intention. The execution of that, so that's some of the good stuff, right? So we were able to involve our new players. We were able to show them the ropes, good stuff. Lessons learned from that is if you are doing that and you are with a team, so breaking up our core team is making sure that everybody's goals and expectations are aligned. So after the fact, you know, just talking with different players, sometimes those goals didn't align completely, and that can cause some issues with your team synergy. Yeah, that was probably one of the bigger negatives.
I can expand on it from my perspective.
I think it needs a little bit more context. So Dan, yeah. I want to go and talk about your thoughts into
my Boker Brawl experience. Bye, yeah. Dan. I'm a very anxious person, and I tend to be an anxious war machine player. I will overanalyze matchups, overanalyze YouTube videos, things like that. I don't have enough time to play, so I end up studying the game. And to prep for team tournaments, something that's been really helpful to me in the past is making a spreadsheet and charting out how I think a pairing process will go. I like to be prepared rather than surprised. And what I could expect to meet against or play against in an enemy team helps reduce my cognitive load. If I can expect to drop into only 3 out of the 5 players on that team, that means I have to memorize less lists, memorize less casters and how they play, and how to not die when I go against them. It really helps me prep for this event. And ahead of time, we should have tried to see if there was a smaller group of people within the pool we were going to assign that were gung-ho about trying to dial in on matchups and be really specific about studying the pairing process and learning that particular lesson.
And just to kind of like go into detail for mine, so I look at Boker Brawl as a completely different experience, where I look at it as not more so as a team event, but as like a family vacation with Erica, Andy, Dan, and Pete and such. And what was strange about this year was that, because it was like, you know, Eric and Andy were on one team, Pete and Dan were on another team, it felt a little isolating. Not to say that, because the people that I was with, you know, with locals, I had Hoy and Rick, and then, you know, people that I knew had Dave Portal, and then we also, got our player Roy on our team as well. Like, there were people that I knew on the team, but, like, and me and Dan, like, even when we were in the hotel room, it just felt off, and I don't know what that energy was. I don't know if it was not that there was, you know, they were like two different teams or what have you, but it just didn't feel as close knit as it has been in the previous years. And I think that again, we're talking about goals, is what, you know, we're looking for out of the event. And I was able to have a, you know, heart-to-heart conversation with Erica like Saturday night about it, and you know, it was good afterwards. And what it turned into is like, okay, well, this goal of me, you know, hanging out with the family for the majority of the day is not going to, you know, be a thing that's going to happen, so what can I do? And I use this Boker Brawl as an experience to get games in with folks that I don't normally get to games in. So I was able to go and play, you know, John Boker from New York. And, you know, I've seen this guy at so many events, and I'm like, I've been wanting to die to get a game against you. So, you know, it was really nice to be able to do that and then, you know, spend time Saturday night with these folks that, you know, I don't normally spend a lot of time with, and, you know, getting to talk with them and, you know, getting to learn more about other players, you know, talking about families and, work and stuff that's like not War Machine. Because for me, the connection piece is what I feel get out of this game as opposed to actually playing the games. Don't get me wrong, I love to roll dice, but as we were saying, everyone's goals are different. So I think having a clear discussion about that would be super helpful for any team going forward.
Absolutely. I love the connections too. I love that guy, John. He's got that golden retriever energy that I feel really defines me as a person as well. But it's about goals, right? And I tell people this about the singles event. I have always for years told people the reason I do the Big Base Poker Brawl instead of the IG qualifier, though I feel I may be a player that I could hack it in that arena. I do the BBBB, number one, because I'm not really don't even have designs on going to Warfare Recon. But aside from that, I feel like I meet a more varied pool of players when I do the Big Base Brawl, and that gives me a more vibrant experience. And it really gives me, it gives me the Poker Brawl feeling. And that's why I do that event. And that's the goal for Friday for me. So it's really important to figure out, what you're going after when you do events with multiple people.
So I think we should shift gears and to talk about our favorite moments for Poker Brawl this year. To definitely shift the tone to something more positive. And I'm interested in hearing what everyone else's favorite moment was. So, Dan, you go ahead and get started to begin with. What was the best thing about Poker Brawl this year?
Oh, my God. The one thing I took away more than anything else was that hall was just lousy with vampires this year. There was dusk everywhere. I fought dusk so many times with my Orgoth army, I actually lost count of how many matches I'd played against Dusk by the end of the weekend. Friday, I couldn't remember how many games I'd played against this army. Looking back, out of the 9 games I played, it was 5. So over half of my games were against just one army. Majority of time, it was like Helleth and Seraphel. So by Sunday afternoon, I was reciting my opponent's threat ranges playing Dusk, and I feel like I figured that matchup out. And now the cadre is going to come out, and I have to start all over again.
Hey, Andy, how about you talk about your top moments?
Yeah, I had a bunch of them, actually. These are, I guess, kind of things I learned from the Poker Brawl. Eric from Murder of Burbs, that team, he was playing Dusk. As Dan said, Dusk was everywhere. He had Scarafil feet and has Israfil directly in the middle of the board. I'm playing Shadow Tongue, and I literally cannot get away. There's nowhere for me to go. So I camped 3 or 4 Fury and just sat there like the guy in the wall for a free kick in soccer and just said, please don't hit me in the face. What I learned during that game is that Two Fronts does not have a kill box, so I could have just left and just been gone. So next time, that is what will be happening for that kind of situation, because he threatens a long, long way.
16 inches.
Yeah, it's a big charge.
And that's without Apparition.
Yeah, my whole game into Aaron from the California team. He was playing Chimera. That game was literal chaos, like, the entire time. I learned that the Chimera beasts do not have the old Legion Serpentine rule, and they can trample, and that does work. He did take a Dire Troll from me for that, and I was sad. Oh, and I finally saw Tatiana. I was playing Rob from Canada. I hadn't really seen her, like, at all. We don't have a whole lot of Winter Core locally. And it was really good to see her, like, played very well. And I did not have any answers for her in the list I played into her. So I got to go back to the drawing board on that one. She, Rob kicked my ass.
And then, Erica, how about you talk about your experiences?
So I have 3 top moments, and I have another Rob story. So my very first game on Friday, I played against Rob from Canada, and he was playing his Boris list. And we got to the point of the game where I was so up on scenario where his only out was to assassinate my caster. He already killed all my shield guards. So I think I was camping 2, and I was like, okay, let's do what you got to do. I got shot in the in the face by Boris for 22 damage and died. So that's just, it's like a life lesson.
Was that before or after you canceled five?
That was before. It didn't matter. The canceled five still killed me.
I was going to say, is your health total 17?
It is. I use this as like, you know, it's life. You know, you could just be in a good position, just nothing's going wrong, and then you just get shot in the face, you know. So it is what it is. It was epic. It was a really good game. Rob was a great opponent, and it was really cool to see Winter Court to echo Andy, because we don't have any local Winter Court players anymore. So it was great to see Boris, you know, being played well, and it was a really good game. My second favorite moment was against Phil into Bart and his pirates. I had a hurt Dreadguard Cav model, and I was trying to proc my vampiric rule by biting a powder monkey, which exploded and killed my cat. So that didn't work out either. And then my last fun moment was into Amber. I was playing my blimp Duskit list, which I think has legs, everybody. I think it has legs. I crit devastated Carver in a rock and killed him with my sky bomber. Or he was like a one hit away from dying, then a cat came and finished the job. But I was just like, oh, I really didn't want to crit devastate that model away from my army. But this is where we're at now, so let's just roll with it. Those are my top three favorite moments.
Other fun things I learned: you can gallows the big pig out of Carver's control range, and then bad things happen to him.
Or he just skips a turn, which is even better.
Well, that's one of the bad things. He might also punch their own models.
So I had a couple of highlights as well. So one thing I wanted to go do is give a shout out to Dave Portal, because he ended up giving me a speed painting tutorial. I've always seen Dave just paint like a madman, always have a new model, any event that I would go and see, and he would just always talk about all these, like, you know, armies he'd be painting and he'd get them done in, you know, X amount of time. And I showed him my Orgoth and said, yeah, this model took me about 5 hours to go do. This one took me maybe like six. And he's like, this model I can get done maybe like in 45 minutes. And I just kind of looked at him dumbfounded, and I asked him, is it possible for you to just paint this model? Because I had two. It was the Groton Champions. And he, you know, can you just show me what you do so I can actually see what he does? And it was incredible with how much skill he threw at me to be able to go and speed paint an army so well. And he did a really, really great job of matching it to the same color scheme as I did, you know, using the paints that he had owned, as well as being able to add more effects like rust and changing up like the soul look to it to get just really quick, easy results, and then to be able to move on to the next model. So Dave, thank you so much for that tutorial, because I definitely want to go and use that for my future painting jobs I'm going to go do for, you know, my models. And I guess like the last thing that I really did enjoy was having a good game against John Boker. It's just a really fun game, back and forth. It was just a pleasure playing him. We were laughing about it. It was one of the games where he wanted to go move his models in a particular way, and we definitely worked with each other to be like, okay, well, we put this huge base proxy here, this huge base proxy there. Does that get you to where you want to go? And it was just like really nice to be able to have that experience of I'm helping my opponent to make the best game that they're able to possibly have. Because the worst thing I think it would be is that you're trying to accomplish something and you know, like, your opponent I think should want the best turn for you. I mean, like, to an extent, but I want him to play the best game so that way I can play my best game into it. So it was just a really good experience, probably one of my more favorite ones that were in there. And then just Erica, a piece of Dusk tech to let you know, I don't know you're aware of, but do you know about the what's the gremlin, the Caskimps? Do you know the Caskimp dealio with the Deathly Domination?
Yeah, I did that to a guy and blew his entire front line of models.
Yeah, he was telling me about it, where there was another game that he said that, yeah, the Deathly Domination of a Caskimp just like walk backwards, just like blow up the whole army. I'm like, it just was such a funny
story. Is this with your Dusk Archers?
Yeah, the Deathly Dominion shot. Yeah, you force them to walk into their own army and just explode on everything in the front line.
Return to sender.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
What do you think, guys? Should we play it out?
I mean, I think that's really pretty much it. So, I mean, I don't really have any other closing remarks. Just, you know, for everyone who listened to the whole entire time, thank you for giving us your time to go and listen to the episode. And I know that Erica is getting back into doing the battle reports. Definitely plug for Nova as well, because the tickets are all on sale for that. Dan, you want to go ahead?
I love War Machine Sleepover. It's one of the best events every year. Thank you, Seth, and everyone else, and Steve Rabideau, and David for helping, jumping in, Judge. And it was a great end to the weekend. I had a little bit extra fun time after the convention. I had a chance to hang out with Adam from Broken Egg Games, and that was an excellent experience as well. So we got to come back to my place. We grabbed some Philly cheesesteaks, and it was a great time. So check out his store for any widgets or gaming supplies you guys need. He was there selling some great new proxy bases at the Brawl, and I think he's going to have some Shadowflame Shard stuff out soon too, if I heard correctly. So check him out.
Andy?
I just want to thank everyone for... I had really, really good quality games this weekend. Like, I couldn't ask for, like, seeing stuff I don't normally see in the local meta and everybody having a great attitude. I just had a really good time. Can't wait for next year.
And Erica?
I just want to thank Seth, Steve, and David for running Bokor again this year. Your tables look great. We definitely tell a lot of work went into that. I think next year's Bokor is the first weekend in May. Try and make that. And of course, I'm going to plug Nova. So our Delaware War Machine Tried and True, we are hosting all the War Machine events at Nova Open, which takes place over Labor Day weekend in Washington, D.C. We still have tickets available for some of the events. Our do or die date is 1 June. So that's the cutoff date when Nova looks to reallocate table space. So at that point, we either lose or gain tables. So if you're on the fence and not sure if you want to come or want to go, it's a great time. We have events at all levels. We have, or at all point levels. We have Prime and Unlimited. We have a pretty kick butt a narrative that we're going to start spoiling some stuff for that as well. And June 1st, that's our do or die date for tickets. But thanks again for another amazing Bokor Brawl.
All right, perfect. And with that, from here in Delaware, thank you for giving us your time, and we will catch you on the next episode. Stay safe, everybody. Take care.
Take care, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.